Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 297 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I am Bill Bellamy. I'm going to send you over to Dolph Lundgren. He's got a rundown for us. Hey, Dolph, how's it going?
You can call me Dolphin, though, if you'd like.
Yes.
Finster. Of course, we're talking about Kindergarten Cop 2, the Dolph Lundgren, Bill Bellamy starrer, the movie everyone's holding their breath for, coming straight to video. We talk about that in the trailer section of today's show, along with some trivia. We got reviews today. We got it for Last Witch Hunter, Daddy's Home, Adult World, Bridge of Spies, Love the Coopers, Goosebumps, The Good Dinosaur, The Visit, and Our Brand is Crisis. A lot of stuff there. We have a good streaming online pick of the week for you guys, and trailers. Like I said, Kindergarten Cop 2, Nina. We have Finding Dory, The Trust, and Ghostbusters, the big one of the week that everyone's talking about. We'll get into all of that, but first, since we don't do the game anymore, let's do the trivia.
Okay.
So last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, because we did the retrospective last week, I asked the question about which actor or actress, a major actress or actor, hadn't starred as a cop, right? And you said to me, Tobey Maguire, which I still won't forgive you for. I think that's such a pussy answer. But, somebody else. And then you said after that, who did you mention? You mentioned Natalie Portman.
I don't know. Who cares?
Somebody brought it to my attention that Jim Carrey, they thought, hadn't ever played a cop. But I had to say Me, Myself, and Irene, which was a good guess.
Right.
I also heard from somebody, Jennifer Lawrence. So, hey, I can't deny that's a major star. But I will say this with that little asterisk there. She hasn't been in enough movies yet. Give her time. She will play a cop. And
sure.
The official answer, apparently, I guess somebody Googled this and wrote to me that the official answer when they asked Siri was Daniel Day-Lewis has never played a police officer. So, once again, I don't know what kind of box office star that is, but he is definitely an actor of notoriety, so there you go. You bested me on that one out there.
All right.
So tonight I have a trivia question, but it's a trivia question that I backed myself into a corner on this one. Let me explain to you here. I thought I knew the answer to this, and I went and researched it and was surprised that I failed my own trivia question, but found it was true for another person. So let me start off by saying this is a three-parter, okay?
Wow.
Three parts to this. Yeah, it's like a driving test.
Okay.
And the first part is this. Name the last director to have directed the year's highest grossing film in back-to-back years. Now, for extra credit, you can name the films back-to-back, and then extra credit, name the years that this person did it.
Well, that's hard.
Now, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to give this away. I thought it was Tony Scott, who did Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop 2 in 86 and 87. But going back and researching that, Three Men and a Baby actually beat Beverly Hills Cop 2. So I fucked up my own trivia question there. But then I researched this a little bit and found out, and I'm talking about in the modern era, which I classify from, you know, basically 1977 to current, when box office records were really being kept thoroughly. Anybody out there?
I don't even know. That's really too hard.
Surprisingly, and this is going to be obvious to you when I tell you this,
James Cameron,
ready?
Spielberg,
Spielberg. It is Steven Spielberg.
It was Spielberg.
It is Steven Spielberg. Now, can you name me the movies and then give me the years? Come on, it's right there for you. It's right there for you.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Gosh.
I wonder if anyone out there is listening to this, like, screaming into their podcasting system, going, what is going on?
I don't know. What are they? Just tell me.
It's Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T.
And E.T. I was gonna guess around
that time 81
period,
and 82 for the extra credit.
That is hard.
The last time it was done. I mean, it's been what now, 35 years since that's been done? So that's a hell of a feat when you think about it. And not as common. You know, you throw out some of those names like Cameron and things like that, but directors aren't really that prolific anymore, if you think about it. Nobody comes out with a
Cameron's
movie.
Not.
Well, even like Tony Scott coming out year after year with a movie like that. It's very rare to have subsequent years of movies.
Yeah.
You know? So even Spielberg now does that. You know, will come out with a kind of a slew of movies all at once, like that when he did War Horse, Lincoln, and Tintin, like, you know, three movies in that short period there. But yeah, it's a three-parter. So well done. You got the first part right. on a half guess. That's hard. Thank you. That's what she said. So moving on, let's talk about the Oscars, which are now 2 weeks old, but still I can't get over the fact that my man, Sylvester Stallone, was beaten. And I don't think it was a fair beating. I think it was a shitty beatdown. I mean, I really broke my heart and kind of dampened the rest of the award show for me. I got to be honest. I was glad Leo got it, but really, I didn't dig this whole new format. My problem started off with the format here. Usually the best supporting actor is the first award given away, and not only that, the building on it was kind of a cool idea in theory, but really provided for people that didn't know the film business, I think was a boring for them. I mean, I knew people that were bored.
It's the same. I don't care. It doesn't matter what order you do the awards in. That didn't help at all. Right? It was like a fairly boring award ceremony, I thought. Really, you know, random kind of movies were winning here. I mean, Spotlight for Best Picture. I didn't really care. You know, Mad Max, it's fantastic that it won all those things that it did. But, you know, it's just nothing. No awards seem to really matter. The really one award I was going for was the Supporting Actor Award. It was the only thing that I was really tuning in for. And so it's unfortunate, as you say, that, you know, it was stolen from him, really.
It really was, and you'll give your review of Bridge of Spies, but I'll give you this little preview out there, listeners, that Trevor texted me the other night and said that the performance by Rylance, while good, was subdued and really, you know, very, very supporting. So, and I don't think that's true of Stallone's turn at all. I posted on my personal Facebook page a video taken of me just basically melting when this happened, and this was not how I wanted that situation to go down, but... Regardless, the award show itself, Leo getting it was great. I think that it was evenly spread in the fact that they gave Oscar for writing to Big Short. They gave this, you know, Best Supporting to Bridge of Spies. They gave, you know, The Revenant got it for actor and director. Spotlight got it. It was almost like Ex Machina was a huge surprise for visual effects, I thought. I didn't think that was
Yeah, that was interesting.
but I think that it was kind of... In a way, all the Best Picture nominees were strangely represented in other categories, whether it be, you know, the acting category. You know, it was all evenly distributed this year. And that's how Mad Max strangely wound up with, I think, the most wins, because they were mostly in the technical categories, or if not all in the technical categories, which it rightly deserved for all those things. I mean, including editing, sound effect mixing.
I really thought it deserved more, to be honest with you, but...
There could be an argument for cinematography, but I mean, if you've seen The Revenant, you know that that probably was the film's strong point outside of acting.
The Revenant didn't win Best Picture, so I don't know.
No, but I'm
talking
about cinematography.
Oh,
yeah. Because cinematography.
You know, they're probably, you know, cinematography is the same. Is it not really? I mean, aren't we just cutting hairs on a lot of this stuff? I think we are. I mean, it's the sound design and stuff. You're going to tell me, like, I mean, yeah, Mad Max deserved to win, but. You tell me the sound design wasn't amazing in all those other movies?
Well, in Star Wars, I mean, that's a lot of sound effects mixing.
That's what I mean. Oh, yeah. So I don't know. For me, like, a lot of that stuff's kind of like splitting hairs, you know? It's all, like, the technical stuff is all done in such an amazing way and such a great job that you can't really be upset with whoever wins, really. You know, except for Ex Machina was kind of an interesting pick because it was so... It probably had what appeared to be at least the least amount of special effects, right?
Maybe because they were the most in aid of the story, in a way. I guess that was my only
maybe it was less people worked on it. Maybe, you know, for the money spent, you know, for what it was, maybe there was a greater achievement there that we just don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you got to remember that if you're an artisan in that category, you can only vote in that category. Editors can only vote for editors. Everybody votes for Best Picture, but actors vote for Best Actor.
Well, nominate. Everyone votes for everything.
For nominations.
Nominate, right.
Yeah, but you can't vote on the winners. Unless you're of that category.
No, everyone votes on all the winners.
I thought you could only vote... nominated by your category.
So only people can nominate things, but it's my understanding everyone votes for everything.
It's my understanding it was opposite.
You can't nominate.
We'll have to look that up. We need Scotty the Wonder Boy back to help us out on that for a fact check.
I think every year I have to look it up because it's so confusing. I don't know why. It really shouldn't be.
The only thing that made me happy really about the Oscars is that The Martian didn't get shit. They didn't deserve it.
I know, right? It was the one that didn't deserve it.
I'm sorry. That was the strangest entry point this year for movies there.
All right. Well,
What else we got here? Oh, I think this is interesting because in the wake of the Sony hack, this went away and now has come back. The fact that Men in Black and the 21 Jump Street franchise are going to merge. And I think this is a fantastic idea. I really do.
It's so interesting.
Because in a way, this could be kind of that Ghostbusters film that
everybody
bitched
about.
Yeah,
it's so weird, right? And they're both kind of they're so different. I guess in the worlds are very different, but they're very much cut from the same cloth.
It seems like
it's
organic.
Kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like just a very weird mashup that you wouldn't think about. But when you hear it, you think, oh, yeah, that would work.
It makes sense, too, because where else are they going to go with these characters? They did high school, college. Now, what's the next step? Well, fuck it. Go fight aliens because no one's going to read your college kids.
I recently read an opinion about Men in Black that I thought was really interesting. And one of the reasons I think this works is that, Will Smith in Men in Black wasn't chosen because he had special powers or – you know, because he was the one or anything like that, he just kind of fell into it. And that works here because when you really think about Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill's characters, they just kind of really fell into 21 Jump Street. Really are very much the same characters. They very much went down the same path.
They've already established a rapport too. So we know who the straight guy is, who the comedian is. But the nice thing here is you don't have star. Who's the hero here? Because it could be either of them.
But is Will Smith going to be in this movie?
I think as a very strange, quietly kept cameo a la Vin Diesel in Tokyo Drift.
So you think really the cross up here is the Hill and Tatum become Men in Black. That's
absolutely
the story.
I think that Ice Cube turns out to be working for that. And this was the whole thing along. They're going to they're going to make it like this whole thing was just training for them. And
I'm down for it. That sounds so weird, but so good.
I know. I think that with the writing, I think this could be really – they've turned everything up on its ear so well in the last two movies. I really can't discount anything they did in 22 Jump Street.
You have to admit, the ending to 22 Jump Street, the jokes of the movies and stuff really kind of segues into this so well.
Because they already used all those concepts. So this is like so fucking outlandish. This is great. You know what I mean? I love the fact that this was even thought of. Whoever thought of this should get a fucking raise at Sony. This might really be happening. They got a director attached already. Now, the original writers and director of this are off busy doing the Han Solo movie for Disney. So this is coming up with a different creative team, which might be problematic. But like you said, the concept is so strong. How could you fuck this up?
All right.
Let's talk about the Death Wish remake, which initially was in the stages years ago with Sylvester Stallone attached. Now is coming back with Bruce Willis in the lead. And I think this is a nice late career move for Willis that may save his fucking reputation because he is now being clumped in with Cage and Travolta. Oh God, John Travolta. I didn't include this show. Did you see
enough.
Iron Wrath? Did you see that trailer? I'm sorry, I got off track.
No.
Oh my goodness. Implore you out there in listener land to Google I Am Wrath John Travolta. And it's this John Travolta movie coming out directed by Charles Russell, who did The Mask and The Scorpion King and is capable in Racer of doing good schlock kind of B movies. But this is like it's John Travolta's Taken moment, and he's got like the full on manicure wig going. I mean, he's got like the hairline from 1985. Boy. And this is like Nicolas Cage territory. He's mining here, man. It's bad.
Well, he's been going that route.
It's this is bad though. His strange looks per movie are just getting out there. But I'm sorry. But Bruce Willis back in this Death Wish remake. What do you think? Good casting, bad casting, no good.
I don't know. Is it coming straight to video?
They're not claiming it is. They're going for.
But don't you feel like it should?
I think anything he does because he doesn't want to spend time on set anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
He's turning into Steven Seagal. He wants to spend
like
3 days on set.
I feel like he's burned a little bit of his goodwill image there for me. He's just been in too much shit, and really, the big movies he's been in haven't been that good.
This is a guy who's in the Steven Seagal mode of sleepwalking through things for whatever reason, and even his big screen products, like you said, going back to The Surrogates, going back to Die Hard 5, are shit.
Yeah.
You have to go back so far to find a good movie he's in, and you can say Red or Red 2 is acceptable, okay, but those are ensemble pieces. He's not required to do all the heavy.
Yeah, those are really great movies, but again, you know, John Malkovich, Helen Mirren are fucking awesome in those movies.
And even
it's
the
not
gal
just Bruce Willis
from Weeds is a very nice.
Yeah,
job.
She's great in it. I mean. Yeah, as you say, an ensemble cast. And those movies are just good movies. Really not good because he's in it.
I'm talking about going way back to 2007's Live Free or Die Hard. It was the last good movie he was in. I mean, that's been a long fucking time. Let's be honest here. I mean, can you think of a Bruce Willis movie that you liked since then? And I'm not talking about a scene in Expendables or this and that. I'm talking about like a Bruce Willis movie that he headlined that he was the guy. He doesn't do it anymore. He doesn't want to spend time on set. And this Death Wish remake might be a good idea for a guy who's committed. But if he's going to pull, like I said, the Seagal thing, and you get some weird chopped up shit like Fire Down Below or The Glimmer Man, you know, or, you know, what is that? Why even Half Past Dead? These guys in their careers.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's move on. No more Bruce Willis talk. For a long time.
Yeah, ever again. Speaking of Sony, they're stacking themselves up here with 2017 that looks like a lot of tentpoles coming out. Did you hear they finally nailed down people for The Dark Tower? We got Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba.
Yes. So that's exciting.
Are you a Dark Tower guy? Did you read that? Were you following that?
I've never read it.
I got through one book, but I don't have time in my life to get through all of them. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, that's the way I felt about it. I mean, when you look at those, are a hefty read.
The Stand was hard enough. I got through that once in my life, and I was like,
I read The Stand. I mean, yeah, you're talking like four-digit page numbers. It's a little ridiculous.
It starts getting like heavy. It starts hurting your hands. You're fucking like, I don't even know how to hold this book at one point on page 700. I'm like, it's like a weird part here. But this Sony is coming out with The Dark Tower in 2017. We have Bad Boys 3 confirmed and supposed to be shooting basically already. Coming out in 2017. So we have a lot of things, as well as a Barbie movie and this Men in Black 23 crossover. So they have themselves set up for have a stellar.
They're talking about trying to get that Venom movie out still, so.
I don't know about that. Why? I mean, you got a competing.
Because they have the rights.
What about the Shane Black Predator movie that crept up out of nowhere?
Yeah, that one as well. I mean, is that going to happen?
Is Schwarzenegger going to come back for this? You been hearing about this? He's talking.
That'd be great if he did, but...
He's talking. He says he might make an appearance. I saw a teaser poster for this thing, but it basically used an already existing image from The Predator, so I didn't know what the fuck the big, you know, breaking the internet or whatever it was, but I didn't think the poster was all that great. All right, what else we got here? Meg. This movie's been in production. You ever read the book, Meg?
No.
I read it.
What the hell is this?
They sent it. You didn't get the book?
No.
They actually sent the Steve Alton, the author of this, has some sort of publicist that sent us the book or sent me the book. I thought you got a copy too because it sent to the movie.
I never got it. So
of Meg, and this was supposed to be, and this has been in the works since 1997 at studios and different writers, and most recently Eli Roth was attached, who stepped away, and now John Turteltaub is attached, and they're really pushing to get this done. And this is like Megalodon, the massive shark. In the ocean, and it's threatening sea life, and it's kind of a Jaws, if you will. But I think this has heat behind it all of a sudden because of the Jurassic World, and I think that there is some sort of idea that monster movies are back in a way. I mean, Godzilla did okay for what it was. I mean, I hated the movie, but it did okay at the box office. Jurassic World did obviously well, so they got this.
Sure, all right, that's what you say. I mean, they are making Sharknado 4 though, so.
Which probably pound for pound would be more enjoyable than Meg.
But sure.
What was the last good movie like this they made? Deep Blue Sea? It's the last one I can think of.
I mean, a shark movie?
Like an underwater adventure kind of like, yeah, like a.
Yeah, I mean, those are tough.
Underwater creature feature.
I mean, they haven't made one in a while, have they?
Well, there was such a glutton at one point of like Leviathan, Deep Star 6.
Those are really old though, man.
But even Deep Rising, Virus, things like that.
Yeah, but Deep Rising wasn't underwater. It was.
Just on a.
I mean, it was in the water, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if you're specifically talking like even just shark movies and stuff, yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, there's a lot of cheap, shitty ones, but I wouldn't count those for anything.
Yeah, well, not like Ten Headed Shark or any Asylum type stuff.
No, there were ones that were worse than that that came out, you know, mid 2000s that weren't Asylum stuff, but they were
with Antonio Sabato Jr. I saw. Yeah. That was absolutely horrendous. It was like on Sci-Fi late one night. It was The Cure for Insomnia, I'll tell you that.
That may have been an Asylum one, but yeah, what are you gonna do, right?
Not watch them. I mean,
Lake Placid, all that.
I liked Lake
shit.
Placid though back in the day for what it was. Lake Placid had a sense of humor,
but a lot of those, yeah.
I think that Lake Placid is kind of the prototype of Sharknado in a way, you know, like what they're trying to do. with that. It was self-deprecating and...
Well, to be fair, a lot of the horror genre is like that, so...
It's more...
I can't really give it up to any one person to do it. They all do that. It's kind of the cheap way out.
Yeah, you don't give it up. I heard that about you.
Shit. I keep it tight.
Only on sight, sir.
What is this finding my old VHS?
The fuck glad we talked about this. All right, so I just had to share this because time capsules, we don't really do time capsules anymore, right? Nobody, like, it's not a big thing any longer, but I'm telling you, man, a VHS.
People do time capsules.
Finding my VHS tape today, I was cleaning out some shit. I came across.
Like it's yours.
It was my VHS tape. It had my handwriting on it, and all it said was New Jack City. And I'm like, well, New Jack City just had its 25th anniversary. I looked for it on Netflix. I couldn't find it. I'm like, I don't own this on DVD. I'd love to watch New Jack City again. So I kick it on the old VHS that's barely fucking hanging in, the player. And it starts off, and I'm instantly just happy because, you don't ever – if you have like a personally taped VHS shit with all sorts of stuff taped from different things, you never know what's on the fucking thing, you know? So it starts – and it's Sports Center, and it's Bo Jackson's first at bat back from his rehab with the White Sox. And it's just a ground out to first, but still, it's taped off there. And then it cut to New Jack City, which is taped off of fucking pay-per-view in like 1991. And it's got, you know, it's like when you had to call and order pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So I watched that. Terrible quality, right? It's got like squiggly lines in it and the whole nine. I thoroughly enjoy the shit out of it. I mean, this is full-on pan and scan glory. Cuts off. Back then, I didn't keep credits because right when the movie stopped.
You don't need that shit.
Nah, because you only had 6 hours of valuable space time, you know? So right when the fucking movie stops, next thing that pops up, an episode of V, the original V.
Wow.
Remember that with Mark Singer?
Yeah.
Great, great stuff. So I'm fast forwarding through that, kind of looking at it, and I'm talking about like commercials that are just fucking gold. I mean, is it ready yet? Not yet. Remember that shit the husband's like? And the chick's doing the ice box. Where's the beef? And we're talking about some comedy gold here. And it's like, then next thing you know, there's an episode of Briscoe County Jr. Do you recall that piece of shit show?
Damn, yeah.
I mean, I was talking with Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell.
And I actually own that series, the complete series on DVD, because you can find it on Amazon. So it's like episode 7 or something random on there, and it's like Fox's lineup. It's X-Files, and this is like season 3 X-Files.
Wow.
And it's like commercials for stuff that you just don't see. And, I mean, like, it's got a little bit of HBO Dream On episode on there, and it's got, like, teasers for heavyweight fights between Lennox Lewis and Riddick Bowe. And it's like a fucking time capsule. And the joy of finding this tape and rediscovering all that, you don't get the trailers and the stuff like that off of DVDs or even Blu-rays like that. It's all so self-encompassing, and it's just so self-contained that finding a VHS tape is really – a fucking glorious thing, and capturing that moment of what was in pop culture and then having it later to look at. I mean, the toys, it was one had a Jurassic Park McDonald's tie-in that I never even remembered. You know what I mean? It's like, it was like, roar. I'm like, I know that roar. It's T-Rex coming to your McDonald's. You know, it's like a little kid covering in the fucking Golden Arches shaking. Crazy commercial. I don't even remember. Anyways, I was all jazzed up, as you can tell. Do you still own any old VHSs, like personally taped VHSs?
Probably not. If I do, they're at my parents' house.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff, I don't know. The problem with the VHS stuff is that if you don't have the player you taped it on, they don't play so well on other players.
Isn't it strange that like the player kind of engraved its own watermark in a way?
Yeah. I used to have, we had, all the Star Wars movies taped.
We taped my them off CBS, off television.
Yes, of course. And then, the tape player goes bad, and then it's impossible to watch them. That'll piss you off.
A word that people that don't understand VHS won't even understand is the word tracking. Remember tracking? Because my tapes would have major tracking
issues.
That was
the whole problem,
if you taped them on a different player than played them at like your buddy's house.
That was the whole problem,
like,
man.
Like 3 bars in the bottom or a squiggly fucking line that ran through it.
Sit there, was it channel up, channel down to do tracking or whatever?
Yes, right. The plus
just sitting
minus,
there, just holding
plus
it.
Minus, plus minus, plus minus. You know, it's like
just watching
it
get. You're watching the lines go up and down. Like, come on, get out of there.
I hope they do a Goldberg's episode on tracking problems. Well, thank you for going back to 1991 with me. I appreciate that. I'm in a little time warp there. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back for reviews of 9 movies.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, we're back. I see 12 movies on this list.
I don't count very well.
You say 9? God, I see 12.
I had 12. One eye open and one ear closed.
Well, let's just go down the list. Let's just start with The Last Witch Hunter.
Which is probably
good. It's the movie everyone wants to talk about, right?
What? Why is this movie so good? I have no problem saying I like this movie.
This movie's a terrible fucking movie by every means possible. You know, the supporting cast is dog shit. They show up, they act like themselves, and then they fucking leave as quickly as they come. He's got 3 separate people in here, really. And it really all comes down to this Rose Leslie chick is the real...
Bartend, basically.
Yeah, but she's like the real... of course, the TV actress, right, who they could afford. Elijah Wood and Michael Caine are really hardly in this.
Checks for one day over.
They're in this a little bit. So I say this is a terrible movie. It's a Breck Eisner movie. I will say this. It's fun, right? I mean, it's a movie. It's one of those movies you say is a terrible movie, but you still liked it.
This is the kind of movie that I never liked, though. This is the kind of overly plotted, backstory heavy, just kind of like... mashup that never works for me, but for some reason in this concoction, all the B-movie elements came together, and Breck Eisner is a hell of a slick director. I mean, even The Crazies looks good. He does a certain slickness to this and a certain craftsmanship to this that makes this watchable. I can't get through the Underworld movies. This is a good movie.
Well, shame on you. The Underworld movies are really good. But yeah, I agree with you. Breck Eisner... give this man a shot at a big budget movie again. We're going to be doing Sahara as our next
retrocast
movie retro, whatever, even though it's not really. Well, it's 10 years old.
11 now, yeah.
Yeah, it's 2016, yeah. But I give this man another shot because he really does everything that he does, whether even if it's a bad movie like The Crazies, which I really wasn't crazy about, it's directed fucking well. Like in this movie, not a very good movie, directed very well.
He has a very confident grasp on narrative language, visual narrative language. He frames shots well. He does certain things
very well.
This is a ripoff of basically a Batman, is what I kept seeing here. It's like a guy who's immortal.
Okay.
I felt very Batman mashups. I felt like a Private Eye, Batman, weird.
Really? I thought like I, Frankenstein, all that shit is just in here.
But I like this more than I, Frankenstein. I like this more than Dracula Untold. I like this more than a lot of these type of movies.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I, Frankenstein is just absolutely hands down terrible.
That's one of the worst movies I've ever
direction
seen.
To, yeah, to everything. Either. No, it really is bad. I know.
One of the worst movies I've ever
I agree
seen.
With you. And this is a movie that is just, you can't explain really why this movie is good, but it just is.
It works in the moment. It was a wannabe franchise starter. It's too bad enough people didn't see this where you could get a second one, because I think that Diesel obviously has a total affection for this genre, because he keeps making
these
like kind of fantasy
movies.
Mashups. Like Babylon AD was terrible.
He
Even
wants one of these
Riddick
to work so bad. Yeah,
this
Last
is
Riddick
better
was bad.
Than anything he's done outside of the Fast and Furious franchise since the original Pitch Black, I think.
Yeah, but this is, nothing really compares to the original Pitch Black, and neither does this. This is really a terrible movie that doesn't deserve a sequel.
On the guilty pleasure level, I think this is better than Chronicles of the Riddick.
Yeah, I would agree, except Chronicles of Riddick is just so vastly different than this. I think Chronicles of Riddick is more grand than this.
Yeah, it is. It's more ambitious. It's a higher budget. Well, maybe not, but it's... Maybe adjusted wise, but regardless, it has more ambition.
It's just a bigger world, I think. I think the world of Chronicles of Riddick is better than this, if I would say that. But I think on the level of enjoyment, I think you're right. I think this is a more – it's certainly an easier watch.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And that's, which is confounding to me because there is so much plotting in this movie, but it somehow works. I don't want to get a lot of
shit. But it doesn't matter. It's so simple.
Why
is it? Yeah. So why does all the backstory and all the shit that's in this that you normally, I mean, when this movie opened, that opening scene, you just thought, oh fuck, this is going to be,
I thought
it
was going to be a long slog. I was like, oh,
and it's
man.
Not, it's so fast. And even when he sits down, he talks to people and they play out the plot a little bit, and you know, it's a dog shit plot. It's just nothing, everything you've seen before. But it just seems to flow. So, like, all the scenes flow so easily. It's the Eisner direction, I think. I think this guy deserves a shot at a big-budget movie again.
I agree with you, but I don't want to discount the screenplay, which isn't, you know, going to win awards, but it was on the blacklist of most likes unproduced screenplays a couple years back. And I think you can kind of get a reason why, because it moves very, very well. All right, let's move on and talk about Daddy's Home here briefly. I got a chance to check this one out. And I was not looking forward to this. Maybe it was because I had no expectations, but I was really surprised
really?
By this one.
You didn't like the I think the trailers for this were hysterical.
I thought the trailers for this were going to show me all the funny parts. And let me tell you what, they don't, which I really appreciated in this movie. There are some great lines in this. I think Will Ferrell's at his affable best in this, especially coming off of Get Hard, which I thought was, frankly, offensive.
Yeah. You know? Well, it was offensive. You mean just to your intelligence or
to really all over? I just thought like I really the scene of him kissing a dick, I just couldn't handle. I was really? Done with the movie by that point.
I thought it was a harmless movie, but
I thought
yeah,
it was mean spirited to everybody in that movie. I thought it was a mean movie. Like every character in that movie was mean spirited.
But you don't get that out of this, even though they're going head to head.
Not really.
They're trying to be mean, right?
This to me is better than the other guys, and I like the other guys. I don't know
the
why
other guys
this
was
movie,
okay.
This movie caught me at just the right moment. It's got some good stunt casting in it. Hannibal Buress is really good in this, who I didn't even know was in the movie because they don't give any of that away in the trailer. And there's a great, great star cameo at the very end. And you'll know what I'm talking about when you see it. We can talk about this further. But really, I was not expecting anything. And I would give this one a total recommendation. I'm sheepishly enough recommending The Last Witch Hunter and Daddy's Home. Two movies that I thought for sure would have ended up on my worst of the year list. All right. Let's move on and talk about Sisters. What do you got there? I want to hear about this one.
Yes, I really like this movie. I mean, one thing's for sure, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are sisters in some alternate universe reality, past life.
I think it's from being on Saturday Night Live for so many years that they just kind of like were roommates in a way. You know, like
they
work
together. Yeah, well, I mean, some people are, you know, work together well. But these, I don't know, there's something other connection here between these two. And so, and it really plays off very well in this.
I think that the third sister is Maya Rudolph personally, but
she's a close second. I mean, she's in this as well.
Oh, is she? Well, there you go.
Of course she is. Yeah. This time, Poehler's playing the straight, guy to Tina Fey's, you know, insanity,
which is usually the opposite role. If you think
it's
about
usually the opposite. Yeah. Well, it was the opposite before. It works very well here. Tina Fey is fucking hysterical. And so is Amy Poehler. And so is everyone else in this goddamn movie.
Is this
really?
Is this Tina Fey's That's My Boy in the sense where she can let loose like an R-rated vein and just kind of rip?
Very much. And yeah. And they do kind of get dirty here and there. Oddly, I guess, at times, maybe. I mean, everyone's kind of okay with being dirty in a sense. If that makes any sense at all. You know, that's kind of weird sometimes because that wasn't something that happened in movies a lot. But now in comedies, you know, everyone has to be real raunchy.
You like Spy.
But it's a good movie.
You thought Spy was a funny movie last year, right? You recommended that, right?
I do think Spy is a funny movie, yeah.
Is this better than Spy?
I don't know if it's better.
Is it funny?
I'd say it's about the same. It's about the same funniness. You know, it's a different kind of funny. Spy was a little more, you know, hokey in a way. Like, I don't know, like it knew it was poking fun
parody
at itself
almost,
and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, really weird situations came of that. This is more grounded in reality.
Well, how about Trainwreck?
A little bit more, very similar to Trainwreck, I thought. You know, it's a little less with the goofiness, a little more with the intelligent lines and stuff that people, you know, it's more of a dialogue driven thing. But still, I thought this was really good. And it's essentially just a party movie. You know, it starts off defining the characters, and then immediately moves into they should throw this last rager at their house, their parents' house, before the new people buy it and move in. And a coming-of-age story, in a sense, you know. They switch kind of places. Tina Fey's character has always been the wild one. This time she's going to be the party mom, and Amy Poehler's character is going to be the wild one. So kind of, in a way, I don't know, kind of poking fun at the situation of the movie, I guess, to begin
that's
with, right?
Since they're kind of switching. They need to do is an actual vice versa movie. They need to bring back the 80s, like Father, Like Son, well, vice versa, 18 again.
Switch, like, switch places. I don't know.
Meet a genie, switch places.
Mm-hmm. Regardless, you know, good movie, funny. What else can you say? I say check it out.
What is it? Really don't...
It's not a lot to deconstruct on it. Adult World is streaming on Netflix for anyone that wants to watch.
Michael Madsen?
No.
Sound like Danny Trejo, Michael Madsen territory here.
This is stars Emma Roberts and what's John Cusack.
Oh, it's a real movie.
This is a real movie. It's a coming-of-age story. Emma Roberts plays a character basically trying to get a job. You know, move out of her parents' house and all that, and winds up working at an adult. Can't find a job anywhere, right? Winds up working at an adult video store, bookstore thing, and she wants to be this poet and this writer. And John Cusack is this just insane poet guy who just hates the world, hates himself, hates everything. And she kind of clings on to him and tries to force this mentorship. From him, and he's just great in this, just as a, you know, give no fucks kind of a guy who just plays with her a little bit. And she's so kind of ditzy and stupid in this that she doesn't really realize it, I guess. But throughout the movie, she, of course, you know, comes of age. She learns about the world and whatnot. But I thought a pretty good movie.
Worth watching?
I thought, yeah. It's free streaming on Netflix, so you watch it for, you know, 10 minutes if you don't like it. It's definitely an indie darling of a movie. Which you heard the plot. I mean, very much sounds like an independent movie, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like Cusack hits a home run in this one, though. This sounds like a role that he usually bites his teeth
in. He's really, yeah, he's really not in this too much. You know, it's really is her story. But when he is, he's just so good, you know, and especially as the idea of that writer who's just kind of like, and always has the right thing to say. He's always kind of above it or above everyone else in the room, you know. And he's definitely just made for this role.
I want to see that. Is that streaming on Netflix?
Streaming on Netflix. I'll say it again. Streaming on Netflix.
Right? Check it out. Check it out there. I want to double back and talk about a movie that we've both seen in the past. I know we've talked about it before, but I got to mend my wound here with Stallone and talk about a movie of his that went unnoticed in 2013, unfairly released on Super Bowl weekend of that year and really buried by Warner Brothers, pushed back a full year from its initial release date. That's Bullet to the Head. The Walter Hill, mm-hmm. Walter Hill, Sylvester Stallone, Christian Slater, Jason Momoa movie, right? And this has got everybody that you like in movies in one movie. No, but this is a great movie. Is it not?
Yeah, I like this movie.
How come this movie doesn't get any play? Nobody talks about this movie when we're talking about how to do a solid little action movie. This is the kind of stuff that it seems effortlessly when these are done well. And it's actually twice as hard to make these well because there's so much shit like that comes out in this genre. I mean, this was such an oversaturated genre, the buddy cop movie or criminals that team up for something. But a guy like Walter Hill shows that he's still got it. These action sequences are better than most of the shit that's out today in big budget stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, today, this is 2012, you know, this isn't a movie of yesterday, right? Yeah, this is a very modern movie that they got passed by, I admit to that, but, you know, I don't know what to say about these kinds of things, because it's understandable in the sense of, I get why it got passed by, you know, it's unfortunate. I think that people don't give movies a shot based on their own merit. Because this is a really, I thought, an excellent movie. And maybe, you know, for better rather than worse, that nobody paid attention to it. Because it did get to have an R rating. And not because for any monetary reason, but really because the story needed to have that R rating.
It is extremely violent, but it's called Bullet to the Head. It's supposed to be.
But it works. And it knows how to use the R rating in the sense that you feel scared for the main character. Sylvester Stallone, you feel at many moments, could actually be killed. You know, and Jason Momoa is a great bad guy in this.
A fantastic matchup. And I love the humor in this movie cannot be understated, too. The fact that the one-liners here are, I mean, really, you party like it's 1985 all over again when you watch this movie. You go, this could have come out in the fucking heyday of this guy, of Stallone's career, and made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and spawned probably five sequels. But the fact that we get it in 2013 is such a joy to see this kind of filmmaking because, like I said, it looks so effortlessly. And Hill is a guy who has repeatedly made movies that are, you know, basically Westerns. They're all Westerns, but they're just in different time periods. I mean, this is very much
a Western.
Exactly. I mean, if you look even at 48 Hours had a lot of Western elements in it. Extreme Prejudice, which I think is another Walter Hill movie that's very underrated, is basically essentially a Western. But this movie, I wish people would just get a chance and download this or find this or get this from Netflix and just give it a shot because you are missing a movie that has an extreme amount of energy into it. And outside of maybe Rambo 4 and now Creed and Expendables 3, this is the movie that I'm proud to have in my collection as a Stallone fan post, you know, the 1990s or the glory era, I should say.
Yeah.
Because this was during that great run, like you said, Last Stand for Schwarzenegger, this, and then you had Escape Plan, which I thought were three solid movies from those guys. The only weak point was Die Hard 5 was in the mix there at one point. In that whole...
No, we don't talk about that
the
one.
Same year. That's the name we don't mention. The Jai Courtney we don't mention.
Yeah, ooh, that one's bad.
Well, talk about Everest. Is Jai Courtney in that?
I believe he dies in this.
Thank God. Is he an Ice Cube already? Doesn't.
He's not. No, he's not in this.
How is this?
This, I thought, was a bit of a failure of a movie. And I think mainly because of the story that it told wasn't really the movie that we wanted, if that makes any sense. You know, it's hard to tell a mountain movie, climbing movie, and do it well if the story is essentially about some people who die of exposure. And that's your whole story. You know, there's no – the cinematography on this is fairly weak. Just all you see is white. You know, there's no real vista. Even when they get to the summit, at the top of the mountain, you know, the views are eh, you know. I mean, clearly the mountain isn't the star of this movie, and it kind of should be. You know, if you're making a mountain climbing movie, you know, it should be a big deal. And they do kind of a piss-poor job of explaining how hard this really is to get up to the summit. And essentially what it winds up being is you sit there, get very bored from people walking around, and then they die of exposure and you wonder, why don't they just get up and walk away? And of course they can't, it's physically impossible, but you know, it doesn't look or seem that way to you. And especially with the buildup to it.
I heard that this is a movie that stays with you though. Somebody said they didn't really particularly care for it, but they couldn't stop thinking about it either.
That was me.
That was you.
That was me. Yeah, because this is a true story, and I've you know researched it, and this is a story that people have known for a long time. I mean, even when they were shooting the Everest IMAX movie, those guys or this happened during that, and I remember back in the day they were talking about the film crew stopping and helping these people out. And in the next couple of days, the IMAX film crew going up to the summit, to, you know, continuing to make their film and passing by all the dead bodies of these guys, which is insane. It was crazy to think, you know, this is real. And he just kind of, people just go up here, up to this mountain. They just go up there and there's all these dead people up there. It's like, holy shit. Right. That's crazy. And these poor guys just to die of exposure. And the one guy, you know, luckily, I guess, and if you can use the word, was able to make a last phone call to his pregnant wife and basically say goodbye. But that's like an insane thing to think happened or just to, you know, think
you're
about
an arrogant asshole at that point because you put yourself in that situation that didn't just happen to you. You know, you paid to put yourself in that situation.
Well, he didn't pay. He was the guide. No, I mean, this movie does a good job of taking characters and kind of building the character up as to what was their final pitfall that led them to their doom, you know? You know, the one guy thinks he's God, basically, and can do anything. So he just, you know, puts himself out there too much and winds up dying. The other guy is too helpful, right? So when he should be turning people away and saying, no, we can't go up to the summit because it's too late in the day, he says, okay, fine, takes him up there, you know, shit like that. Which is fine and all to have that in there, but that shouldn't be, I feel like shouldn't be the focus, you know? We miss out on the whole experience of what it actually takes to get up to Everest, up to the summit. So I think ultimately kind of a failure and a dud of a movie, unfortunately. I mean, but by the time they start to set into to the play of people are going to start dying, really, you kind of start to tune out.
So you're still saying the best climbing movie is K2?
Sadly to say, I know. I've had this discussion with my dad because we're really on a search for a good race car movie and a good mountain climbing movie, which they don't exist. You know, there are so many problems with these movies. Just in general, it seems, you know, that they can't make a good one.
I'd say your best race car K2. Movie is Rush and Days of Thunder.
Yeah, but it's
and your
not.
Best climbing movie is K2. That just says a lot.
Which is a joke.
Yeah.
Speaking
of jokes, let me know about Bridge of Spies, the Spielberg movie that won for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, so, I mean, to put this just quickly, a great movie, Tom Hanks, you know, Steven Spielberg, World War II after, just, you know, within that era. So, yeah, good movie. But Mark Rylance, is that the guy's name?
Yeah, Rylance.
Yeah. After watching this movie, this guy stole this award. I don't know how the hell he got it, really. It's such a subdued role. And really, he doesn't show off any acting chomps, you know, in this. There's really nothing for him to, not his fault necessarily. It's just the role is very small.
Well, it's written by Ethan and Joel Coen, or co-written by them. Is there any sort of sign of that quirky Coen brothersness, or is this a straight up just?
This really feels way more Spielbergish than Coen. I would say that, and you know,
is it good Spielberg though?
Yeah, it's perfect. It's a fine movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. You know, it's nothing amazing.
It's solid.
But it's solid. You know, it's exactly what you expect from it. Which is why I'm really.
You sound a bit underwhelmed.
Blown away
by
that he
won.
Well, you know, some of these Spielberg movies, I felt the same way about Lincoln. You know, and I think this has the same problems that Lincoln has.
Well, Lincoln had an over-length problem, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, I mean, and this one maybe is a little too long as well, but it's not as bad. But yeah, I mean, in the end, I don't know. You just nominate these things, it feels like, because it has a Spielberg name on it, but you don't expect any win from it. You know.
Well, maybe that's why he didn't get a nomination for Best Director.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was up for Best Picture, you know, so it's a little strange.
Yeah, well, it was all right.
I want to know about this Love the Coopers, because you actually sat down and watched Love the Coopers. I mean, you are using your Voodoo account like a madman, aren't you?
I did watch Love the Coopers, because I'm just loving movies lately. Oh, I just want to sit and watch every fucking movie that comes out.
I'm excited. I mean, you've been on an anti-movie binge there for a while, so I'm glad you're back. Glad we got you back. You've been watching a lot of television shows.
Yeah,
so
I haven't
watched a movie.
I haven't disliked any movie that I saw, really, aside from The Visit.
Let's talk about
which we'll get
Love
to later.
Coopers,
but you want to talk about Love the Coopers?
I do. Yeah.
You know, I will say the problem that I have with every single one of these types of movies, this is one of those multiple
storylines. It's a Christmas holiday
movies.
Movie, John Cooper, or John Goodman, Diane Keaton.
It's really more about, it's less to do with Christmas, more to do with relationships.
Right.
And it's a couple different relationships that are...
Come on, this looked like the Family Stone wanted.
Can I explain?
Isn't that like
no,
kind
no,
of the
no,
golden
no, no,
standard?
No, it's not. It's not. This is one of those multiple... storyline things
like the big wedding, like Valentine's Day,
like Valentine's Day, like that kind of shit. Yeah, it's more like that. So
New Year's Eve.
It's unfortunate because, you know, the Diane Keaton, John Goodman stuff's just, you know, filler. It's like, good God, let's move this along.
Olivia Wilde's in this, right?
Yeah. So the good stuff, you know, the Amanda Seyfried and Alan Arkin stuff was really good, I thought. What's her name? Olivia Wilde and whatever the... who's... Do you know who that guy is?
I'm not sure
is?
The guy is the soldier. I'm not sure who that is.
I'm looking bad enough. I'll be able to know.
I don't think...
I've seen him in TV stuff before, but honestly, I don't know. Jake Lacy. Yeah. Anyhow, he's really good. And so is Olivia Wilde. And for... You know, really, I could have watched an entire movie just with them meeting in that airport. They were both played off each other so well. So it kind of, in a way, again, the movie kind of ruins it for me because I fall in love with one storyline.
Yeah, it goes away.
And forced to watch the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then whenever you come back to that, I just think, my God, look at these two. Just these actors, just I could watch them act, you know, all day long.
Taking shitty dialogue and making it, you know, palatable.
Yes, exactly. You know, they could be saying anything, and I'm just thinking, wow, they're playing off each other so well, and I really am rooting for them by the end of the movie. It's like, come on, you know, get together.
So this isn't a Christmas movie, then? It's just Christmas set?
It just happens to take place at Christmas. They really could be going home for anything.
Then they mismarketed this thing. They sold this as a Family Stone situation, and they should have just been more straightforward.
That's what I'm telling you.
It's like a Christmas Eve instead of, you know... Valentine's Day or New Year's
It has
Eve.
To do with relationships. Like I say, Amanda Seyfried and Alan Arkin are one of the relationships, not a sexual one, but...
Just a relationship.
In a way, kind of, like he's too old for her, obviously, but if he were younger, you know, clearly this would have been a sexual relationship, I guess.
Well, that's pretty scary.
So it's interesting. it's done really nicely. Like she sees him at one point as a young man that he used to be, you know, and it's stuff like that. I don't know. It's nicely done.
Sure, Jared Fogle. which your fucking footlongs over there?
Not that young. What are you talking about? She's like, yeah, she's dreaming about the 8-year-old Alan Arkin. Ooh.
Wait, speaking of Jared Fogle, let's talk about Goosebumps. Because this motherfucker gives me goosebumps, and you saw the young adult adaptation. I mean, you are on a fucking run of movies right now, man. I want to know here what's good with Goosebumps. Because this actually intrigued me. I thought the trailer for this looked like it had almost like a Men in Black type special effects and comedy. Just,
you know, this is a fun, like, Disney-esque, you know, family movie, I guess, is what you would say about it. You know, it feels very Jumanji, Zathura-ish.
I was going to say Jumanji, yeah.
And so just, you know, fun in that sense. And not really, there's nothing heavy about this whatsoever.
Special effects look good.
Yeah, special effects were fun. You know, fighting evil goosebump guys, you know, monsters is fun. I guess.
Do they work the property in pretty well? Like the fact that these are based on the...
Very
like,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Black plays the R.L. Stine guy. All the books, and I'm guessing these are the actual books, because they're referred to... One of the kids refers to a lot of the books. Like, oh, I read this one. I read that one. So I'm guessing these are the actual monsters from the books and stuff. I never read the books, so I couldn't say, but I would imagine they would use it, right?
You've got the property, might as well. I mean, shit. I think it's inventive to include the author, have somebody playing the author and kind of
It was a great
version.
Idea to turn these into kind of a, you know, one movie, in a sense. You know, a bit of an overdone thing with the author that can write and then his writings come to life. We've done that many times before. But they don't really, you know, stick to that in any sense like it's like a huge revelation. They're just kind of like,
we can do this too. Just
and
let you know.
This is how it is, yeah.
We could have gone down there, but we're making a ride over here. Just let you know. All right, well, let me tell you about The Visit, because this is M. Night Shyamalan's return to box office glory. This was made for $5 million, made about $65 million. And when I found out that this was a found footage movie, I couldn't get past the first 2 minutes. Honestly, I couldn't.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. It has all the bad things that you hate about found footage movies, car rides, you know,
shots.
People making a movie for no reason. Think, why the fuck is this happening? Anyhow, so it's about a sister and a brother go to visit their grandparents for the first time, their estranged grandparents. and the grandparents are crazy. And the girl is making a documentary about her family, I guess. And then that's the movie, you know. And the twist that Shyamalan Ding Dong's got going on in this one is fucking lame. Just as lame as all the other Shyamalan Ding Dong fucking movies that made you realize the dude's real ding dong.
It's been it's been a long time since one of his movies really connected with me. I have to go all the way back.
Because he tries too hard. The twists are no longer any good.
They don't need to. You know? There's no need for that theatrical twist. Although I never saw Lady in the Water, and you tell me to go really back good. And look at that one. Really, because everyone I do like that one.
Everyone says that one's bad. For whatever reason, I like that one. I think I liked it because, there's really. I mean, I can't even remember the twist in it, which maybe why I liked it. But that one, to be fair, Signs is good.
Signs is good. I forgot about Signs, actually.
But the twist in Signs is almost ruins it in a sense. Because it's just too, his twists are too in your face. And they're too kind of, in this movie especially, it really ruins it.
So you're not recommending it.
Because you really want, no, not at all.
Is this as bad as The Happening?
Yes, but you know it doesn't have a very whiny Marky Wahlberg.
But why?
So that's a plus in this one, and kind of more. I don't want to say more happens mother. In this, but yeah. You know, I don't know. This is one of those movies where you think some crazy shit's gonna happen, but it never does.
And then
the twist happens. And you go, oh, that's why none of the crazy shit that I wanted to happen never happened.
So, fuck this movie.
Basically, I mean.
I wish that you could say that. I mean,
what do you think this movie was?
Box.
What do you think this movie was about? Like, what do you think the deal with the grandparents
I think this is like a Hansel and Gretel type situation. I put this on for 5 minutes and turned it off. So I have a slight thing about this movie, but I thought it was like Hansel and Gretel going in. I don't know what the twist is because it was fucking 80 minutes past where I
Which makes you think it's a little like maybe magical or.
Yes.
Something like that, and it's totally grounded in reality.
Of course, they're probably schizophrenic.
Yeah, well.
Grandma's got a mental disease. Yeah, well.
You just have to wait to the twist, or I could just tell you.
No, I'd rather not. I want to torture myself, then I want to get back on here and scream about it. Because I will watch. I will finish this.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, if you're gonna watch it, go ahead and watch it. It's an unfortunate movie. Reminds me of The Village a lot, you know.
I want to talk about this this kid's movie, Good Dinosaur. Because I saw some of this at my buddy's house. He has very young kids, and he was watching it. And I was telling you, man, the fucking animation on this. I said, I haven't seen a kid's movie in a while, I guess, because I was so blown away at how realistic, photorealistic, lifelike that the water was, that the trees were, that I was captivated. I mean, I saw it on Blu-ray, but I mean, still, it was un-frickin' believable how beautiful this movie was. You didn't like it, though.
Well, to be fair, all you said was that it looked beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get a chance.
Which
to really
who could not agree with that? It is a beautifully rendered film. The animation is good as always. This is Pixar at their best visually. Story wise, it's not. It's a bit of a letdown. It's really not much of a story here.
Really, the clever trick is that the dinosaur is more scared of the boy. That the dinosaur is the main character.
Basically.
Yeah.
I mean that's the whole thing here. It reminded me, how to explain this. Pixar does a lot of weird stuff, and this is kind of one of those off storylines where you could see it working maybe or maybe not, right? There's kind of a flip of the coin. They've been really lucky to have made some really great movies, but they do so by taking a lot of risk. And this reminded me a lot of Brave, which took a huge risk, and people really didn't like that one so much. But I still commend that and this as well for being different than other movies, you know.
This to me, without the Pixar touch to it, could have easily been one of their straight-to-DVD releases.
It could have been now that they have Lasseter over at Disney, this could have been a Disney movie as well. You know, there's really very, I don't, there's becoming less and less of a difference between the Disney brand and the Pixar brand.
Especially with Zootopia getting great marks now.
Zootopia.
Frozen.
What was the other one? Yeah, Frozen's very good. The one with the robot thing. Baymax. What the
Big Hero
was that thing?
6.
Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what to say about this. You know, it's an unfortunate failure. It could have been better. If you have little kids, you know, they'd probably love it.
Yeah, they were mesmerized by it, the under 3 set that I saw.
Yeah. I mean, it's all right. It has its funny moments. Great casting, as always. That's one thing you have to say about Pixar movies. They cast voices so well.
Well, I think DreamWorks does a pretty good job of that, too.
I don't know. I think
Inside
Pixar
Out
does a better job.
Ridiculously cast, I will say that, too.
This as well. I mean, I'm right. Sam Elliott, perfect.
That's where I heard Sam Elliott's voice. I just thought recently, did I watch Roadhouse or something? I was like, where the fuck did I see Sam Elliott in? That's where I heard his voice at the other day. I'm like, this is the voice of God. I hope when I meet God that he talks like Sam Elliott. That's all I want to hear.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah. So, good stuff. All right.
Let's talk about Our Brand is Crisis. This was the Sandra Bullock version of Whiskey Fox Trot, right? No. That's
Tina Fey,
right? This is the political satire that tanked early this year. Or late last year with it was this year, wasn't it? Was it already this year?
It was last year, 2015.
All right, 2015. Billy Bob Thornton, Sandra Bullock, produced by George Clooney. What is up with this one?
Directed by David Gordon Green. Right?
Yes,
kind
right.
Of a, kind of a maybe
from
a weird
Pineapple
choice.
Express.
Was it a weird choice? Yeah. So the movie's, you know, it's okay. It's not terrible. It's really not good. Sandra Bullock, of course, is Sandra Bullock. She's great. Billy Bob Thornton's really good in it. You know, Anthony
Mackie. Why didn't
Mackie
it take off then?
Fine.
Why didn't it connect?
Because the story's pretty fucking boring, man. that's the best I can say for it. It's just, I've never seen
the documentary.
Right?
No, I thought you saw it.
No. But I don't even know if I'd really be interested in seeing it. Really, not a lot happens. You know, she shows up. They kind of fuck around for a while, and then they wind up getting this guy into office. And then they play some kind of heartstring bullshit at the end where she fucking goes off to... She goes off to, like, help the revolution, you know, against this guy now because he's an asshole, but she got him in the office, so now she feels obligated to do something. What she does, who knows? Because in the movie, she just, you know, wanders off. It's a silly, silly movie. I don't...
Sounds like dog shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really bad. It's just not, there's just nothing, you know, stands out about it. It's just a movie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good at all. You see a lot of things this week, and I commend you because you liked most of them, which is, hey.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even like this. I will say I didn't outright hate anything. I even didn't really outright hate The Visit, even though I kind of talked bad about it. Because while you were watching it, you know, those M. Night movies are pretty well constructed to, as long as you turn it off right before you get to the ending.
Yeah.
If you leave it as an open question mark, you know, it's probably a better movie.
What do you got for a streaming online pick this week?
I'm going to say Into the Tour. Yeah. Which is streaming right now on Amazon. If you haven't seen it, I say check it out. I mean, it's free. Yeah. Won't hurt you.
You'd be an asshole if you don't.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt you. It's a good story. Good acting. Check it out. I like the indie movies lately. I like the indie ones.
Yeah, you have gone. Although you just watched a lot of studio movies that you kind of like too here, to be fair. But you did just, you went indie on me here. Very, very interesting. You're turning back to the little stories in a way. The kind of more grounded reality stories.
Well, they're better.
In a lot of ways, they are. I'm going to recommend one called Before We Go, the Chris Evans, Alice Eve movie directed by Chris Evans, about a young Boston guy.
I wanted to see this.
Did you see this one?
No, I want to see this.
Yeah, this is on Netflix now. It just became available on Netflix, and this is an independent drama. I think you might like it because it is – it's kind of a charming little movie in a way. I like playing it cool. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I like that as well.
Yeah, this is – in a sense, it's the kind of – it's that same Chris Evans character, but it's applied to a Before Sunset.
You said directed by him as well.
Yeah, he stars and directed.
Any
this.
Good? Direction-wise?
It's not a fuck up like Lost River was with Ryan Gosling. You know what I mean? It's not a total blunder. Right. So,
but just kind of. I mean, it seems like an easy movie to direct. Really,
that's what I mean. This is like top five in a way. You know, and Chris Rock directed that. It's kind of effortlessly directed in a way. The leads are so photogenic and charismatic and have such good chemistry that you just kind of follow the movie. And it's a slight movie. Don't get me wrong. This happens over a brief encounter one night. But that's why it reminded me of the Before Sunset, Sunrise, Midnight series that Linklater did. I feel like this is kind of Evan's little nod to that. So for, you know, you talked about dramas and independent movies and it's kind of made me think of that. And that did come available. So I recommend that to you.
I will have to watch it.
Trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about...
We only have a couple trailers.
Yeah, we're going to this one. Let's talk about the big trailer of the week. Ghostbusters landed.
I thought you were going to say Kindergarten Cop 2.
No, that's for me the big one. But this caused quite a stir on the internet. Already misogynistic claims, racist claims.
This,
all bullshit.
We'll talk about this. We'll talk about Nina as well, which had the same effect. I mean, good God. What's wrong with people? Can we stop trying to fix the fucking world for a second and just, you know, watch a fucking movie trailer? Good Lord.
Yeah, there's a platform, and fucking trailers or message boards about trailers are the wrong place to, like, spew hate or a speech freedom or some shit. I don't know, but, like, it's getting crazy. I just wanted to watch a fucking trailer, and I'm bombarded with, like, tweets and all sorts of shit about it.
When Leslie Jones has to come out and just be like, hey, what the fuck, you know, you're not helping me. I'm not in trouble. I don't need saving. You know, that just tells you we're being a little too sensitive. About minorities in movies, aren't we? I mean, this fucking Nina thing as well, that going to, like, we can't, so a colored actress can't play a colored role anymore because she's not quite the right color or really doesn't look the part. Like, we're down to that.
That's getting pretty petty. It's getting pretty petty. Let's talk about the actual movie, though, for a second. I mean, I agree with everything you just said.
Let's talk about the trailer, yeah.
add to it, and it's
gotcha.
Pretty, you know, inflammatory to some people. So, funny story is that the Ghostbusters trailer, I think, is a mild success. I can't say that I'm exactly stoked about this, but I think it's really in the same vein, and it has possibilities.
I think it changed my mind about this. I really want to see
exactly?
this now.
The performance, the jokes, the tone?
It wasn't
what?
the tone, the look of it. Use of the music in this.
Music,
oh, my
yeah.
God, just hearing that music and
piano
seeing
piano riff
you know,
slowed down was nice.
Yeah, seeing the Ecto One and all these, you know, Slimer, and I love the special effects in this. I love the look of this. This feels like an upgraded '90s look for special effects to me, anyways. I know there were complaints about it. People thought it looked too good.
No, it looks great.
I think it looks really...
I think it's still in that same mode. Same
it has to be look modern, you know? It can't look like it came from the fucking 80s, right? That would be stupid. But they do keep a lot of the look of that still comes through here. Like, when I see Slimer in this trailer, it looks like Slimer, and it kind of looks like he was optically printed in there, you know? He doesn't quite look like he was digitally composited. And so I think they did a really good job of keeping a lot of that... look, I would say, to it, even though it's all updated, of course, and very slick.
I will say that Kate McKenna is on the verge of being a huge star.
So
she's
good.
Hilarious on Saturday Night Live, steals the show week after
so
week.
So good in this. I thought she damn near stole this trailer.
She's like the Rick Moranis of the bunch. I don't know if that's who she's playing, but that's
she's
kind
definitely
of her oddball character kind of quirk in this. And
kind
I
of
think
on the sidelines, it kind of pops in here and there.
And she is on the verge of superstardom when this comes on. I'm telling you, this is going to be her breakout role. I can't wait
for
her.
Really, yeah, I think the cast is great. I mean, Kristen Wiig's great, Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, I find absolutely hysterical.
This is basically Saturday Night Live.
So I know,
with
right?
the addition of Melissa McCarthy, who's hosted
Melissa McCarthy.
A bunch of times.
I'm good to see this. I'm good to give this a shot at this point, at least.
I'll say the same. Yeah.
You know, maybe it'll wind up being horrible. There's still that shot. And maybe it'll just be okay, you know. Maybe it'll be a Men in Black 3, and if it's that, then I'm fine. You know, that's
yeah,
at least
so
that's good enough.
If it's not a RIPD, I'm good.
Yeah.
Or Seventh Son, for that matter. Let's talk, since we already got into it, about Nina, because there's already been, you know, all the things that you said, the controversy in Zoe Saldana taking shots from people, probably really respected people in the industry, about not being dark right. enough to play this character. However, all
she
that
has
aside,
a wrong nose. I mean, they did prosthetics and stuff on her for this, but you have to think, well, what's the difference between that and someone playing old, you know?
It just,
to me, this we're getting real silly with this whole minorities, you know, has to be a certain person, this and that. You know, I understand whitewashing and all that, but now we're getting ridiculous.
This isn't a Gods of Egypt situation. Okay, this is a little bit different. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, but anyhow, this is supposedly not very true of a story anyhow.
but it looks good, nonetheless. It looks very Lifetime
really?
In spots, but
yeah,
I thought that her performance in it looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, the performances are fine, but the movie itself does seem to play. Like, I get when
it's like a Joan Crawford performance here.
Well, when the daughter's saying, you know, this didn't happen, this is totally fake, you know, she never had this love story with this guy and stuff. But you look at this movie and you think, oh, well, I can see why they invented it, right? I can certainly see what they were going for. So it does kind of ring false to me a little
bit. Very soap opera.
It seems, exactly. It seems very forced and very created.
I'm sure this will come and go very quietly after this hurrah, because this doesn't look to be a huge box office potential. Even though Nina Simone is an interesting character and her music is mm-hmm. fantastic, it probably deserves a decent biopic. But there have been so many biopics about musicians in the last couple of years that
a lot. Yeah,
I mean, even the Jimi Hendrix one with Andre Benjamin, which had potential, was, you know, not widely seen at all. So these are coming and going very quickly. Let's talk about The Trust. Nicolas Cage, Elijah Wood get together for an extremely offbeat heist film set in Vegas titled The Trust. At first, I couldn't understand what the fuck was going on in this thing. I thought Elijah Wood was like doing a Nicolas Cage impersonation.
Yeah,
but by the end of the
right?
trailer, I was kind of won over. I got to be honest. And I'm almost excited to see this movie. Am I crazy or what? What'd you think?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think Elijah Wood and Nicolas Cage look fucking awesome in this.
Right?
Oh my God, this looks like so much fun. I cannot tell if this is serious or if it's a comedy. I think it's a little bit of both.
Do you know what this reminded me of? Was that Kurt Russell movie, The Art of the Steal, that came out a few years ago, but like a better version of that in a way. Like a version I'm more interested in seeing.
This feels like a 90s movie or an early 2000s film that's, you know, is sneaking onto the big screen. I don't even know if this is coming out on the big screen, actually.
It looks like it should, though. It looks damn good.
I know, it does look like it should. Yeah, I think Nicolas Cage is giving it his all, and Elijah Wood looks to be as well, and I don't know. I kind of like these weird cop movies like this. You know, these guys are kind of bad cops. But in a way, you know, Nicolas Cage is just playing his wacky dude crazy self, and Elijah Wood is being his introverted, you know, maybe he'll turn on you kind of little creepy guy.
Kind of serial killer in a way. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is a very black comedy. If you look at this, it's dark as hell on some scenes. But at the same time, it had me laughing out loud two or three times.
Yeah.
Just from the quietness, this, you know, with the guy looking at the guy for an extra second.
I laughed at the stupid jokes because Nicolas Cage's delivery.
Nicolas Cage still has the goods. And this goes to show that when he gets into that quirky mode and it's directed in the right way.
When he said, you know the drill, I laughed.
Yes, so did I.
And it's a horrible joke.
When they're at the hot dog stand and he said, you want to rob somebody? He goes, no. When he went, maybe. You know, I just thought, like, that's that kind of moment like in Matchstick Men where I was laughing when he was at the pharmacy. You know, I think that's great, great comedic timing he has. Underused comedic timing. So, yeah, check out the Trust trailer. Now, let's move on and talk about Finding Dory, the highly anticipated Pixar sequel to Finding Nemo. And a great idea for a follow-up. I mean, who wouldn't forget where their family was but Dory? Right? Doesn't it seem organic?
Yeah, I mean, people love Finding Nemo. I do.
People
think
love
it's a
Dory,
great movie.
Too.
So, yeah, and Dory's, one of the – she's a very fun character. Why not, really focus on her for the sequel, I guess? I don't know. I mean, I guess the interesting thing on this is that we're going to have – Nemo and his dad, Marlin, ooh, I know the dad's name, are going to be together in the Finding Dory this time. So it's a little bit different, I guess you might say. I don't know, is it? Seems like the same movie.
It does. Even got the sea turtle me? Back. And I'm like, yeah bro.
Seems very thing. Similar, but kind of funny. I like the octopus stuff and all that.
It'd be hard for them to fuck. I think this it looks good, up, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's you know, the first one's so cute, and this looks just as adorable. So
they find such clever ways to mine the worlds, though. You know what I'm saying? Like when Pixar gets into a world, they really do mine that world for every joke, witticism, cleverness that they can. I mean, very few stones left unturned. So I wonder what they can achieve here that they didn't in the first one, because their sequels have not, as we know, been up to par for the most part. So outside of the Toy Stories, I can't think. Cars right. wasn't very good. Cars 2, that is. I mean, it was good.
The Monsters University wasn't very good.
Yeah, I didn't care for that when I saw bits and pieces of that.
But this one does look good, and like you say, it's kind of just a retelling, a rehashing of the original. I don't see how you can mess it up. Very much similar to what the Toy Story ones were.
And it's been 13 years like since that original, believe it or not. My goodness.
I know. Was that one like 2003?
Yeah, my goodness.
My God.
Speaking of long time between sequel and original, we have Kindergarten 2 coming 26 years after the first one. I mean, the kids from the first one are of legal age and probably have kids themselves now.
What the fuck is this? This is way too much of a comedy for my taste.
This is Dolph Lundgren and Bill Bellamy. Like,
this is dog shit is what this is.
Wow. I mean,
the music in this is like, holy shit. You know,
maybe it's something. I doubt anytime, it, but the trailer no, is kind of like shit.
This is dog shit, man. I mean, this looks to focus on his and the kids, right? And this looks to be hardly any cop. Anything in it whatsoever.
Oh, no. Remember when he takes out his gun and he shoots the vending machine for not giving him his Doritos? Because
that doesn't happen in the school, before. Though. You know that doesn't happen at the school.
No, that's gotta, it can't, because he'd be arrested.
That has to happen at the FBI place. Or
for sure. That's like the
at.
Very beginning when he has to show that he's such a renegade. That he's like
that's
crazy,
what I'm talking about.
Wow,
they install those cameras and stuff so Bill Bellamy can watch him trying to get shit out of the kids. And that's going to be the whole fucking movie, you know? I don't know. This looks terrible.
You know, the line about both my mommies say that boys are bad, and Bill Bellamy is like, get her out of here. It's just like, yeah. Really? That's where we're at now? It's not a tumor. It's a long time ago. Okay.
Well, Dolph's just not funny either. You know, at least Arnold's funny because he's a goofy fucking behemoth.
Yeah, I like
weirdo
Dolph.
Guy.
I still watch a Dolph movie every couple
but
of weeks.
But man,
don't
this
is wrong.
Funny.
I just watched The Russian Specialist, which was great.
Jesus.
But Dolph is not. Yeah, it's good. but Dolph is not a comedic force.
No. Yeah. This. I don't think this works at all. You know, even the hand, the finger snapping at the end was a little like, what the fuck.
I think the first Kindergarten Cop was no gem, but at the same time,
at least it works.
But
you know,
it had
and it's
of mixing violence and that kid shit. It's a very tonally strange movie as well. If you go back and watch that movie, it doesn't totally.
But I still
hurt.
Think it works, and I really think it works because of the time period. This just doesn't work with today's movies, and when you look at the poster for this, you know this is a piece of dog shit when they stamp the little all new movie fucking stamp on it.
Yeah, to let you know that this is a sequel shit. And not some, you know, like, this. Look, we mined the wells. Hey, Universal has gone back and mined their own wells for Jarhead, Dragonheart, Scorpion King, Death Race. You got a fucking franchise. They will give you a sequel to it right now. Like, what do you got, kid?
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I thought this sounded like a great idea.
It did kind of sound
but
like,
execution,
oh, okay, I'd like to see it.
Execution no, looks not to be good on this one.
This looks worse than Tooth Fairy 2. Or Jingle All the Way 2 or some of the other ones. I mean, shit.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Why wasn't what's his name in this?
Yeah, where's Larry the Cable Guy?
Larry the Cable Guy.
You can't tell me he's too busy. What's he doing? Fucking Rolaids commercials?
Yeah.
Like, when I get heartburn, I do this. Sounds like Propecia.
All right.
So on that note, we're going to wrap up episode 257. We want to thank you all for joining us. We want to shout out to everybody out there listening on Stitcher, iTunes, TalkShoe, or wherever else you may be getting this podcast. Go to MovieMavericks.com for the latest reviews and our past podcasts. Leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance, or Facebook. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'll be back next week with the Sahara Retrospective podcast. And the week after that, we'll be back with a regular program. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!